following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
I mean, it's like... Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. On an afternoon, we got some rain on my side of town. I don't think it rained much up here.
Rained my place for a little bit, not a ton though.
The wind blew like crazy. Yes. I've got a couple of big.
It thundered a ton.
Oh,
it
got really dark. It was threatening. Yeah. It got dark.
Very dark.
It got really dark. But we've got a couple of really big crepe myrtles, and I looked outside and it looked like it was snowing. I mean, the wind was blowing all the blooms off the crepe myrtles, and it blew some things down. But we got a little rain, needed some rain. Hope everybody has gotten through it okay. I mean, wind, I think, was going to be the biggest concern here this afternoon. But it is what it is. It's summertime. Summertime, and you can get some pop-up intense thunderstorms. But we need some rain, so not going to complain about that. But welcome in, everybody. It's the Thursday edition of The Drive. You heard Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer, who is here in the studio along with me. Drew is at the controls, and we're here for the next couple of hours. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about, it is not the busiest time in sports.
Nope.
Right now. I mean, a lot of things have wound down, wrapped up. I mean, with the U.S. out of the World Cup, there are fewer eyes that'll be on that. Although that's still going. I mean, you've got Major League Baseball and golf.
Yeah,
is about what's going on right now.
And baseball's about to go on the All-Star break.
That's right.
So yeah, it's going to be an interesting next couple weeks. Now, fortunately for us, you know, media days in 2 weeks. That you know that kind of signals, hey, we're about to get things really kicked off. Been to a couple of basketball practices this week.
Yeah, I definitely want to get your thoughts on that. It was nice to see that the full squad has now been assembled.
Full squad's there. Can confirm. Have seen them with my eyes. Can't like go into details of everything that I saw at practice, but I can tell you that this is gonna be it's a fun looking group. You can really tell right off the bat the added size and the depth of these additions. I think is gonna make a difference.
Yeah, that's something that last year you thought there was a chance for depth last year, and there were some injuries and some guys didn't quite pan out the way you thought. But just early impressions, does it look? I mean, that this appears to be a pretty talented group that's obviously got more size than they had. But I mean, just does it look like they will indeed have some guys that have the ability to make some shots? I mean, that was a thing last year we thought we'd see more of and really, really didn't. But, I mean, there appear to be quite a few guys who have track records of being good shooters.
Yeah, I think one of the things they did a really good job of this offseason is when you bring back Tahad Pettiford and Kevin Overton, but, like, especially when you bring back Tahad Pettiford, surrounding him with players that make sense for him and guys who can catch and shoot off of it and guys who can run the rim, I think were the two big things. Because last season it felt like Auburn got stuck in too much with isolation scoring and you know, Tahad just didn't have the freedom that he did in the past because he was playing with different guys.
Right.
You know, and look, Keyshawn Hall scored a lot for Auburn and had some games where he won them some games with his performances, but it was that kind of style where it was the ball went to him and it kind of stuck and it kind of got Auburn into playing kind of move and stick basketball instead of really kind of stuff we'd seen in the past. So one of the really big things I think about this team is not only do you bring back Kevin Overton, who in the second half of last season was one of the best shooters in America, you've got a guy in Montas now who – you know, is as advertised, I think, as a shooter. I think it's very – like, his shooting numbers overseas, whether he was playing a lot or a little, if he was playing for the national team, if he was playing for his club team, if he's playing over here, you know, when he's playing in Australia, just a really like a knockdown 3-point shooter, and he's good. He's got pure mechanics. He's like everything you would expect in a European wing. The technique's there, and he does a really good job, I think, better than most college basketball players coming in, where he shoots on the move really well. It doesn't have to be perfect for him to like he
doesn't have to be set.
Yeah, he's a good movement shooter. And you know, Adam Olson, incredible shooter at South Alabama. George Kimball, I really like the way he shoots the ball, you know, as well. I think there's some of the bigs, Buki Oboye being one of them, is like you could stretch it with them a little bit. It's not having to be all that. But you've got Oboye, you've got Narcisse Ngoy as well, you've got Owen Freeman, and then you've got guys that are
Thomas Dowd. I mean,
Thomas Dowd. I think Dowd's a guy that, you know, I don't think he's going to be like ultra relied upon as a 3-point shooter, but he can knock it down from out there. I like the gravity that you can go with this team, because you could see kind of the thought process. If you're two centers, the two guys you think are going to play center the most, in Oboye and Goy, what are they? They're just big guys who run really well and move off their feet. And when you create that gravity, that 1-5 ball screen gravity, and it's just kick. I remember a couple of years ago when Auburn was so good when Tahad was on the floor, when he would get a ball screen from a guy like Dylan Carwell or a guy like Janai Broom, and they'd drive, and everything would be going down the lane, and then it's just one pass out to a guy like Miles Kelly or a guy like Denver Jones, and it's just knocked down. I think Auburn's in a better position to have more of those knockdown guys, not just KO. Last year it was kind of just KO. It's a little more different this season. No disrespect to Elijah and those guys, but these are more dedicated catch-and-shoot players that I think are going to really, really fit well with the style of offense Auburn wants to play, because they got away from that last season because of their personnel.
Yeah, I mean, last year, you're exactly right. The ball slowed down a whole lot more. Oh, yeah. I mean, you saw much more movement.
Your best scorer was an ISO guy, and that's something that was very, very rare. Auburn had never really had that before, and there's pros and cons to that, and I think you saw the cons of it a little bit more down the stretch of the season when you needed more from others, and it never really flowed well. Like it was a good offense. I mean, the numbers were really good.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you saw some of the shortcomings when you didn't have the 3-point shooting that you really, really wanted. Or, you know, you felt like you couldn't get Tahad Pettiford going like you did. Now, different competition, but that NIT run, you saw Tahad get more into that kind of flow. And I think the other thing, too, is just like they're going to be able to play faster. I think you're deeper. I think your bigs are more mobile this season. You know, I think Keyshawn Murphy did a lot for you last season. Not necessarily, especially with the injury issues he had, not necessarily the most like run up and down the floor type of dude. Now you have two legitimate 7-footers that their best attribute is running and getting down the floor and you know being lob threats, being guys that can move their feet really, really well. That really fits. I mean, it's like, you know, different type of player, but it was like that's what made, you know, really in the final 2 years of his career, that's what made Dylan Carwell a guy that turned into like, oh, he's somebody on offense, right? Walker Kessler, who just got paid a ton by the Lakers, same way. It was just like, yeah, he's not going to shoot, and he's not going to be a guy who's going to like take you on that way. But if you have guards who can move and be creative, and you can get those pick and roll actions going, you have so many weapons. And if the defense is having to worry about what's going downhill, you've got outlets, and we know how talented those passers are.
Yeah, and the guys on the outlets there's more size there. I mean,
yes.
when you know, the first thought when you hear about Auburn being bigger, you think about inside and the pair of 7-footers and 6'10 guy, but then you've got 6'5, you've got more 6'5 to 6'8 wings than Auburn's ever had.
Yeah, no, and that helps. That helps a ton. I think Elijah Freeman was good. You wanted for that kind of length last season. But it was kind of it. Now you have Adam Olson, who's a tall shooter. You have Montas, who is I would say Montas is probably closer to 6'8 than 6'6. Like he is legit. Like I think it was something like his measurement at a combine one time was like 6'7.5 or something like that. And, you know, shoes, non shoes, or anything. But like he plays big. Like he plays like a bigger guy. And you need that because. You know, I think last year some teams got to kind of get really physical on Auburn and know that they could, you know, kind of pack it in a little bit at times or, you know, play bigger. Like that was the other thing. It's like Auburn 3 seasons ago, you couldn't outbig Auburn, right? You had Janai, you had the, like, you know, you had those guys like Janai and Dylan that could do that. And you saw how many teams last season. I think of the Arizona game. I think of what Florida did all year long. I think of what Michigan did to win the national title. It's just like size, size, size. You've got some of that now to the point where, you know, there could be a lineup Auburn runs next season where, you know, you have a 7-footer and a 6'10" guy and a guy who's like 6'7", 6'8" on there, and you could have a 2-guard that's, you know, 6'6" if you wanted to, and you could, you know, keep rolling it that way.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not like KO. I mean, Kevin Overton's 6'5", too. It's not like he's undersized.
And I know this has gotten a little bit of buzz here recently because of, you know, I think Steven said something about it last week at Ambush, but, you know, Caleb Williams coming in.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Caleb Williams and Simon Walker, if both of those guys can give you something, if they can give you anything in a rotation, okay, those are 6'4", 6'5", 2 guards that you could play. Like, those are guys that have good size. And not to take anything away from a guy like Tahad or like George Kimball, but, like, you can have those at the 1-2. But if your 2, 3, 4, and 5 are winning in the size battle, it becomes less and less of, okay, does it hurt that Tahad Pettiford's just a 6'6", 6'1" kind of guy? And that's the thing. I think Williams, you know, looks the part early as a guy who's going to compete.
And that's you know, there's a guy that wasn't you know, he wasn't like a 5-star, wasn't a top 50 player or anything like that. But sounds like he's made a good early impression.
And look, last season, if Simon Walker doesn't get hurt in the preseason, he may have a chance to be in that rotation, and it gives you something different, right? It gives you something a little bit better out there. You get more size. You definitely get a lot more shooting. Williams is, I think, more of a combo guy, more of a guy that will get to the basket. He's not a catch and shoot guy like Simon is, but he's more of that 1-2 mold with a little bit more size. That he's a pretty good athlete. He's a pretty good athlete. Finished his senior year of high school pretty well. And look, I mean, again, when you go get a guy who was a, you know, 3-star, 4-star, you know, borderline guy out of high school in this day and age of college basketball, you're not asking that guy to come in and become a star right away.
Right.
That's just not the case. But if you get a guy like that and he's valuable enough to say, hey, he can give you some minutes in a rotation, then you look from an Auburn team that you felt like, hey, 8, 9 deep, something like that. Well, now you can maybe think of going 9, 10, maybe even 11 deep if your younger guys come through and just show that they can give you something. Defense is going to be the big thing there for him, much like it was for Simon last year. But, I think, you know, you're going to get this opportunity with these practices here when you go to this overseas trip to Greece and just show what you're made of. That by the time the season rolls around, it might be time for them to, you know, roll some of those guys out a little bit because, and we can talk about this, you know, later, but it's not official yet, but we know pretty much all of the non-conference schedule. I put that out today at the Observer, just kind of breaking that down. The non-conference schedule this upcoming season, there's a little bit more padding in it and a little bit more balance that you didn't get last year.
It's still tough. Quality.
It's a quality, but it reminds me, and we can get into this later, it reminds me a lot more of the schedule they played 3 years ago. The last two were just...
Oh, yeah.
But that was the plan, right? It was
you had everybody coming back two years ago, you know.
3 years ago, they play Baylor, they play at App State. Those were their two losses. They go to Brooklyn. They play some home games. They play some games on the road. And it wasn't like there wasn't this big one, like, shining marquee thing. Now, you have that opportunity with Arizona, potentially game two or game three in Vegas. But then you look at the rest of that, and it's like Clemson made the tournament last year. Wisconsin made the tournament last year. You know, you've got some. You could potentially run into an improved West Virginia. You know, how much better is West Virginia this season? You know, you're going to play them in Vegas, so it's a good balance. And what that is going to afford you, if you're Auburn, is, you know, last season, and I talked about this with Stephen Pearl earlier this summer when I did an interview with him. I was saying, like, last year, if you're Auburn, and you would love to have gotten more reps for some of these guys, but you didn't have, like, some of these younger guys and get beat deeper. You didn't get that opportunity
because the schedule was more than a small reason for that.
After they played Houston, I looked this up. After they played Houston, starting with Houston, and then the next stretch, they played 11. I think it was no 9 games. Houston on, the next nine games they played in non-conference, seven of them are against high majors.
Right.
And so you had no time to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
This schedule upcoming, it's going to be a couple of paycheck games, couple of tests. Couple of paycheck games, couple of tests. Paycheck game, test. Back. And like you will have kind of a little bit more. I like the balance of this a lot more. There's some padding there that you didn't get last year that I think a new team needs. We saw that 3 years ago. The schedule wasn't as tough, but if you remember, that team went 11-2 in non-conference play, got off to a really good start in SEC play off the heels of that, and then eventually ended up winning the SEC tournament because I think they got to grow a lot and benefit a lot because they weren't necessarily going out there every night having to survive. Mm-hmm. They got to kind of work on themselves a little bit, and I think that's what this schedule looks like a lot more.
Yeah, well, that's a very good idea, and that's something that Stephen wanted to have it more like that. And it's his team. This is really his team this year. Yeah, we'll talk more basketball. Anything you'd like to talk, we'd love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. Just underway. Bill, Justin Ferguson here in the studio with Drew at the controls on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive with Bill
Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Thursday edition of The Drive. Bill, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. Drew at the controls. And John is up first on The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Hey, John, how you doing today?
Hey, guys, good day. The rain's cleared out.
This came through in a hurry, man. I'm serious.
Boy, didn't it? Hey, had a question about the schedule this year for football.
Uh-huh.
I kind of feel like a litmus test for Auburn comes in there the last two Saturdays in October with home and LSU and road Ole Miss. I feel like, I just want y'all's thoughts on this, but a good litmus test maybe for the entire season. You'd really like a split there, in my opinion. Because if you get a split there, I feel like it opens up a little bit, especially the back half of the schedule. And just thinking off the top of my head, this is 2026, and none of this has any bearing on this year's game, but 2006 LSU, if I recall, was 7-3, probably the best defensive game I ever saw in Jordan Hare with LSU. And 2016 was the game that LSU had the disallowed touchdown and they fired Les Miles right after. So just kind of wanted y'all's thoughts on maybe that two-game stretch and how it maybe plays out for the season.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, yeah, you're hoping that, the next decade, the year, the ending in six, Auburn can do something similar. Hey, Auburn's got to survive October. October is brutal with at Tennessee, Georgia, and Ole Miss with the LSU home game there in between. You get an open date in between the road trips to Tennessee and Georgia.
I think if you find a way somehow to win two of those
games. Oh, man. If you win two games,
you're in a
spot
for a great season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, that survival. LSU is going to be fascinating this season.
Yeah.
They're going to be really, really talented. I think you're catching them when they're going to be able to figure it. The thing about LSU is going to be they have a brutal start to the season. Their schedule at the beginning is really, really tough. Dan and I were talking about this on our podcast earlier this week. They will have time to – like, they will be battle-tested at that point.
Oh, yes.
And so that is going to be very interesting. But my other thought there is, yes, it's an early kickoff. That's going to be kind of the downside to it.
Yep, indeed.
But it is the biggest home game you get this season, you know, that one in Florida.
And that's more than a little bit of a bummer to have your biggest home game. You know it's an 11 o'clock kick.
Yeah, that's a tough one, but I do expect that one to be really good. And you know, by that point, on the flip side, Auburn will have been plenty battle-tested.
Oh, yes.
At that
no
point.
Kidding.
So I think it is a spot where it could be, you know, if you're able to knock off a team like LSU at home in year one, if you're Alex Golish, I think you're, you know, it's a fantastic opportunity. Because if you do that, you hit that stretch right after that. You know, in November becomes a lot, you know, it doesn't look as tough on paper.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a lot more attainable. So it could be kind of like a jumping off point of sorts for them. So it comes at a really interesting time in the schedule for sure.
Yeah, and you're right, John. I mean, Auburn needs to at least split those games. I mean, mm-hmm. You do. November, you've got with Arkansas at Mississippi State and Samford before you play Alabama. You've got a chance there if you're not broken. Yeah. I mean, right. You know, that's the thing. If October is just brutal and you're beaten up and beaten down,
you get swept in October. November becomes like a very interesting situation.
Yeah,
but you're right
for survival.
And you look those October games that you got lined up there, that stretch. You know, the one at home, the big one at home, feels like one that you could probably maybe a little bit more manageable to get than some of those, just because of your home field advantage.
I agree. And the other thing about Ole Miss is I want to see, especially after the coaching change last year, I always look at teams like the year after a breakout season. What happens when they face adversity?
Yeah.
You know, do they fold? Ole Miss will be a fascinating case in that this year.
I agree. I said this earlier this week in our podcast. Ole Miss, that run they made in the semifinals without Lane Kiffin and all the drama there, I compared it to like – a guy like the adrenaline rush of like playing through an injury or something like that. Okay, what happens now when it's died down? What happens now when, okay, yes, they still have Trinidad Chambliss. Yes, they still have Kawan Lacey. They've got some really good players. But, you know, what does it look like now that we're going to be, all right, now it's Pete Golding's team. Now it's like, what does that look like? Because I think they were so motivated and they were so almost got to the national championship game just off of just pure, you know, defiance of what was going on right now. Very interested to see what Ole Miss does year after that, because talent-wise, you know, you look around the SEC, they returned several of their stars, and they returned their quarterback, who was such a revelation last season. You're in a good spot. I'm just very interested to see how that offense continues, because without Lane – and then, you know, what we see from some of the new pieces they've got on the defensive side that Golding had to reload, because Ole Miss's defense wasn't as good as people kind of expected they would have been last season.
And they have, their stretch there in October and into November is pretty darn challenging as well. I mean, not that at Florida and at Vandy and Missouri or anything easy, but then at Texas the week before Auburn comes in, then they've got Georgia at Oklahoma the next couple of weeks.
Auburn catches teams at some fascinating times season. LSU, you were mentioning the LSU game. LSU has got a pretty easy October, but they have a brutal November and a brutal September. The most fascinating one to me personally is I guess there's two of them. Auburn plays Tennessee and Georgia back-to-back, right?
Right.
Like on the road.
Yeah,
Tennessee is immediately after Tennessee plays Texas, and Georgia is immediately after Georgia plays Alabama. Mm-hmm. Like that is the next game.
It's the next week.
Those are two very interesting time games for Auburn. Where, you know, if like I'll just be honest, like you look at those road games, right? Tennessee, Georgia, Ole Miss, and then you can throw in Alabama there. But like those three right there, if you could get one of those. That's such a big early signature win
if you can get one of those and win the home game, you've gone 2-2 in October.
Throw a parade!
Absolutely.
Because unless you completely botch September, you're in a great spot. Timing is everything with these schedules. Auburn's got a brutal October, but then you start looking around because of the 9-game schedule, because of Texas.
Everybody's got a ridiculous stretch somewhere.
Yeah. Texas and Oklahoma being in this league now, everybody's got a 9-game schedule. Everybody's facing can't remember who it is. There's one that's I want to say it's like maybe Arkansas or somebody like that.
It's usually Arkansas or Mississippi State.
You start looking at their schedule and you're just like, all right, good luck. And once you get past a certain point, they're bearing down.
Oh my goodness,
you.
Arkansas. Even though they have Georgia in game three, but they got North Alabama at Utah, then Georgia at home, and then Tulsa. But at Texas A&M, Tennessee, at Vandy, Missouri, at Auburn, South Carolina, at Texas, at LSU.
It's crazy. It's a crazy schedule. I think, you know, that's my thing with this October. If Auburn can get a good September under their belt, survive October, try to pick off one or two of those teams, you're in a good spot in November.
And super last thing, you know, looking at Ole Miss, that's an 11 a.m. kick for us in Oxford, and they're in the middle of a Texas-Georgia sandwich there.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like sleepy start to me all day. But
yeah, I take that all the time. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing, they've gotten better the last few years. We know that. But Ole Miss not necessarily known for crowds that show up on time and go and get loud. I mean, it's just
especially for those
they have
early
been
games.
Better these last few years.
They
but
have.
a lot of the times that I've been to Oxford, even when those teams have been really good, it has been like, all right, where is everybody at? You know, and it's just, you know, tailgating a little too long.
I mean, they will have played LSU at Florida and at Texas. I mean, if they have, you know, if they got three losses or something coming in, that, then you just wonder.
And that's what I said about Auburn, like when they talked about the 9-game schedule, which is something I wanted to see for a long time. My take was, much like college football playoff expansion, it's like it doesn't make Auburn's life easier. It just makes
everybody else is closer to Auburn's.
Correct. That's the thing. It's like your life didn't get easier. Everybody else has got tougher, right? Yes, you're the only team that has to play Alabama and Georgia every year, because I think Tennessee didn't draw Georgia every year in this league. Yes, that's tough. But, like, look, there are a lot of teams that are going to be in that exact same spot that they are, where they've got this brutal stretch of games. And it just makes everybody have to go through kind of what Auburn has dealt with. So if you can jump back up as a program, you're in a better position, because, you know, it's not like the old days of the divisional stuff where it was like, okay, Auburn goes through this gauntlet just to get to Atlanta, or Auburn goes, you know, through this gauntlet to get into the, you know, 9-10 win mix. And then you look on the other side and it's like, well, this was one of those years where it was just Georgia and everybody else, or it was one of those years where it was like Florida and Tennessee or somebody like that. Like, no, you, if you make it to Atlanta, if you make it to the playoff out of this SEC, you are going to earn it. And that's for everybody. There's no easy passes anymore.
There are some that are easier than others, but you're right. It's very difficult to find an easy route.
I would say if you looked at the toughest schedule in the SEC this season and the weakest schedule in the SEC this season, there's probably not a ton of difference.
They're a lot closer than they ever were.
In years past, you would say, well, it would be like an Auburn or an Arkansas. You'd be like, oh, here's this is the toughest schedule in the league this year. And then you would look at somebody in the East and you'd just be like, I guess. You get to play Vanderbilt and South Carolina, and you know what? Kentucky and, you know, Missouri's not doing great right now. And that, you don't get that as much anymore. The other thing I think is really interesting, and I know Auburn fans don't want to hear this because they have to play them every year now, but like I personally enjoy, we talked about this also earlier this week, I personally enjoy that, like, Vanderbilt's no longer like a free space. Like, the fact that Vanderbilt is like, there's no, this is the clearly worst team in the conference and you better like take
it. They shouldn't be. I mean, we'll see. I mean,
I think Arkansas could get there. I think Arkansas could, and we'll see if Vanderbilt can stay there, but like, I like
they should still be better than they used to be.
Yeah, I like that every team, like even the bottom tier of the conference, like I like that all of them can be competitive. Like that makes for a more fun league and makes for a better schedule. And like I said, it just makes it so that everybody has to deal with this now.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think it was when I was talking with Doug on Monday, you know, we were talking about the fact that every year there's somebody, or there's a team or two that's picked in the bottom half of the league that steps up and makes a big jump. Vandy's done that. You know, Ole Miss has done that over the last few years. In these days of such turnover on the rosters, it seems even more likely that it could be just be crazy that it. That's one of the interesting things as we get ready for media days is, look, the preseason predictions are usually way off anyway. But, I mean, you have less knowledge. You've got to be less sure about just about every team because there are more question marks and there are more new faces that may or may not have done something in another place, but it doesn't always translate. So that's one of the really interesting things as we head up toward media days here in less than 2 weeks. We're a little past the bottom of the hour. Need to go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports wise here on the Thursday Drive, give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Thursday Drive.
6-7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Justin Ferguson here in the studio. And, yeah, we're talking football. I wanted to get your thoughts on a couple of things. I mean, early on, Auburn's got the non-road games, the Baylor game in Atlanta, and then the rest of September is at home. That Florida game is really, really interesting. I mean, the Gators, who's going to know really what about them? I mean, they've got FAU and Campbell in their first two games before they make their, first road trip and first conference game here at Jordan-Hare.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that on paper, Florida has a better roster than what Auburn has this season. Last week at the Observer when I was on vacation, AU Nerd, who does a lot of really good stuff for us in recruiting and roster stuff, he broke down, it was like, he made a really good point that I hadn't thought of. It's like, obviously the Summerall and Golish thing was
awesome. Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
They were both candidates at both schools. Mm-hmm. They went in two different ways in bringing, what they did. With their year ones. At Florida, Summerall gets there and he's like, let's retain as many of these guys as we can and then fill in with big name transfers and all that. Golish went for familiarity, bringing a lot of guys over with him from USF, having a lot of guys leave.
And didn't go after the biggest names.
No. Got guys that kind of fit with what they wanted to do. And so it's going to be a very interesting kind of dichotomy there. The interesting thing I think about it is that, Summerall didn't take a lot of his Tulane guys. He didn't take his offensive coordinator was a guy they got from Buster Faulkner, who had a great run at Georgia Tech. The interesting thing there is that I think on paper Florida's roster is better than Auburn's from top to bottom, but they will be untested a little bit heading into that first game. Into that game, and then on top of that, we have no idea what this quarterback is going to be like. It's probably going to be Aaron Filo for them, who was the backup to Haynes King at Georgia Tech last season. So he knows this offense.
Mm-hmm.
But how good is he? Meanwhile,
no matter what he does the first two games,
right.
It's nothing that like getting ready for. I mean, that's not SEC.
But meanwhile, you know what Byron Brown is in this offense, and you know what Byron Brown is. You'll have a better – they'll have played Baylor in week one.
Yes.
And Baylor's an interesting case because Auburn's going to be a better team than Baylor. They should be favored. It's going to be a virtual home game for Auburn. But they were so bad on defense last season, and which was shocking for somebody like somebody with Dave Aranda's background.
Right.
They went out and got Kansas State's defense coordinator. And he was pretty good. They had really good defenses at Kansas State, brought a lot of transfers in. So I'm interested to see how that kind of matches up because it's weird because this is a team that they were very disappointing last season, lost to Auburn, obviously, and then had a tough year. They were so good on offense and so bad on defense. Well, they bring Dave Aranda back for another year, and it's the upgrades came on the defensive end, and they're completely hitting the reset button on offense. Like, they didn't bring back hardly anybody on that offense. DJ Lagway is going to be their quarterback now. They obviously lost Bryson Washington to Auburn. Most of that offensive line's gone. They had to kind of reload in the wide receiver ranks. It's really interesting because, you would have thought from last season, it's like, okay, this is going to be a tough test early on with offense. It's like, I don't know what we're going to get on Baylor on offense, and I would expect them to be better on defense.
And
that'll be an interesting test early on for Auburn.
Yeah, and you would also figure that Auburn's going to be pretty good on the defensive side of the ball.
Correct. Yeah, and that's the thing is like when we were talking about these kind of matchups Auburn has, like down the stretch, like an Arkansas or Mississippi State, on paper, if you tell me, hey, this team's got a pretty good offense, but you don't really know what they're going to be on defense or they're coming off a rough year on defense, I'm like, that's kind of the teams that Auburn, I think, would want to play right now instead of the other way around because, it's just that teams with really, really good defenses, you're going to be playing an Auburn offense that, especially early on, we don't know what that's going to look like at this level. We know what a lot of those pieces do. There's a lot of question marks there. Defensively, you feel better about Auburn's chances because
– Well, there's so much more continuity.
So much more continuity. And you've got really good talent and depth back there. Outside of corner, you're just kind of like you feel pretty good about a lot of those spots.
And at corner, you've got two guys.
Yeah.
You've got two experienced guys there at corner, and then a lot of young a lot of young, inexperienced players.
Offensively, it's like, what is the line going to look like? What are all these USF guys going to be like together? You know, can you get anything out of your tight end room? Like, it's that's where the question comes in. So that's what I think that first matchup against Baylor is just it's going to be a fascinating one, because I think if Baylor's better on defense, which it would be hard for them to be worse than they were last season, that's one thing. It's just you have no idea, because my brain hears Jake Spavital offense and DJ Lagway, and I'm going to be like, how is that going to work out? Because we've seen Lagway these last 2 years. He's got a lot of talent, but it's like, can you put it all together? And they're banking on him to be better than he was, like, needed that reset. Sometimes that really works for certain guys, right? That worked obviously really well for Bo Nix, right?
Yeah, but other times it didn't work, and it's not going to work.
Right. Jackson Arnold.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, exactly. What path are you going to go down if you're Lagway? That's a fascinating game in week one. And then, you know, you were talking about that with Florida. Florida, you know, can Auburn home field advantage and maybe a quarterback edge, could that get them over the hump in that game and give them a good chance to get a win, you know, in your SEC opener against Florida? And then,
boy, Auburn needs to win a big ball game at home.
Sure.
They really, really do.
Then you get Vandy the next week, and I expect Vandy to be a good team this season, but they are hitting the reset button. Mm-hmm. They went last year was them going all in on the continuity and the experience they had gotten from that breakout year the year earlier. Now the Bills do for that roster, and it's not going to be a bad roster. The level of talent.
It'll be a better Vandy roster than a lot of Vandy rosters few decades.
And look, you know, you've got a situation with – you know, that coaching staff that is just – they have a really good culture. They don't make a lot of mistakes. They play good sound football on both sides, and they just make you earn it. You know, I don't know what Vandy's schedule is early on, but could that be Jared Curtis's first road game, big road game?
It is his first road game.
Yeah.
They've got Austin Peay, Delaware, and NC State at home.
You'll be tested by NC State, but it will be at home in week three. But, yeah, again, like, you know, if Jared Curtis is the quarterback like a lot of people expect, the five-star coming in, you know, welcome to SEC football.
First road game being a conference game is generally tough for anybody.
Yeah, and it being in Jordan-Hare is going to be – that would be a tough ask. And so, you know, it's – the schedule makes – again, we've said it a billion times, like the October stretch is rough. The October stretch is rough for a lot of teams as well, but you've got some interesting little edges maybe in September, and then obviously in November as well. Because I'm going to be honest with you, I have a hard time looking at Arkansas this season and seeing any real confidence.
You're right. It's hard to expect that they're going to make a big step back.
I stumped Dan on this one earlier this week in our podcast. Do you know who the defensive coordinator at Arkansas is now?
I did. Mm. It's a familiar name.
It's a very familiar name.
I'm blanking. Who is it?
Ron Roberts.
Yeah. I knew
and
somebody
they were
that...
so bad on the defensive end last year, and they're handing it over to Ron to kind of reset there. I'm interested to see where that goes, because he left Auburn to go to Florida, and it didn't work out at Florida either. So that's such a crazy spot. And look, I mean, it could work out. He was a good coach, good, not great, I guess I'd say. He beat Alex Golas last year, but like the overwhelming reaction in Memphis to Ryan Silverfield being hired at Arkansas was good. We weren't going to be able to get rid of this guy. Like you were good enough. The Memphis story his whole time there was they were good but not great. They never played for a championship. They never broke through and like challenged for a playoff spot or anything like that. But they were just good enough where you weren't going to fire the guy.
No, they're winning like 9 games a year.
Yeah, and so now you go that to Arkansas, and it's like, all right, what does that look like there? Meanwhile, Memphis goes and hires Charles Huff, and like people are really excited about that there. So yeah, it's going to be. That is the one situation in the league this year where I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, like, you know, let's see how this goes. In year one, you're gonna get a lot of grace, I would think, but it's different than like the year one at Auburn or the year one at Florida or the year one at Kentucky.
Oh, you're right.
A lot of excitement there. That one, and what in the world happens if South Carolina's disappointing again. Is another
Shane Beamer's gone.
And it's like, what did South Carolina? And I know Auburn didn't play South Carolina this year, so it's not something that people have been paying close attention to around here. But like, the thing with South Carolina is they had a very disappointing year last year when they were supposed to break through, and then mm-hmm. they brought a lot of those guys back. Like, they were like, all right, we're not, you know, we got to keep Lenore Sellers, we got to keep Dylan Stewart, we got to keep Nick Harbert and those guys like that. And all right, like, let's see how it goes, because, you know, I think it's banking on, like, okay, well, was last year just an anomaly, or could something change? Because other than that, if not, you feel like South Carolina might be one of those teams where it's like, you know, are you going to be late to resetting, where a lot of the teams that were in the bottom half of the SEC last year just went ahead and pulled the trigger,
right,
and just said, you know what, all right, we're going to go ahead.
Well, there was there was more than a little discussion about that,
mm-hmm.
About them going ahead and making that move,
yeah,
a year ago.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
yeah, they better step it up.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, say I'm an expert on all things South Carolina, but I do know they were extremely disappointing in baseball this season, and I do know that they are probably going to be the worst team in the SEC in basketball for probably the third out of their 4 years in men's basketball, and it's like, their football team's not as good. It's like, I mean, you know, people are going to get desperate.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, Dawn Staley's awesome, and that women's basketball program is as good as it gets, but like,
they need more than that.
they want to be good at more than just for sure.
No question. And you were talking about Ryan Silverfield. We were thinking about this yesterday, just looking at the lineups. He's going to be like an invisible guy on the last day when Sark and Lane are there.
Mm-hmm.
And your other two are Silverfield and Lebby, but Ryan Silverfield is going to be like,
Lebby. Man,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, somebody we were talking with yesterday said the two of them could walk around and nobody will even notice.
State this is might be too inside baseball. State has a small beat. It's a smaller fan base, and you know, not as many people cover them. Arkansas doesn't have a small beat, but like, that's a long way to go.
It is,
and it's like, how
a long time to be there? How long are they going to be there? Are they just going to go down late, or
right? And you know, R.I.P. to the guy Bob Holt. He would be there all week, and he'd done that. But now that Bob's passed, it's like, I don't know who's gonna hold it down for Arkansas out there, because we even said that last year. I remember Dan talking about when Arkansas was going through last week or last year at Media Days. He was just like, you know, some of those rooms, like the electronic room he was in or something, like, it's like, it's
nobody
it's,
there.
There's nobody here. Nobody's asking questions. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is Arkansas. Like, you know, so we'll see. We'll see. The good news, I think, for Arkansas is they should be pretty good at basketball this season.
And I think they've got a shot.
By the way, did you see what Texas did today?
What with the five-star
Marcus Spears
recommitting
son.
Marcus Spears Jr.
Yeah.
Reclassifying to 25 and saying, yeah, he's headed to Texas.
Texas is going to be really
26.
Really,
I mean,
yeah, bet. Texas is going to be really, really good. They were already going to be really good. This kid's mm-hmm. the real deal. I really wonder now what Elijah Freeman's role is going to look like at Texas. I mean, I did not. He was not penciled into me to be a starter at Texas anyway. And it's like, what does that look like now? And you know, again, I think Auburn would have loved to have him back, but.
Well, he can. I'm sure he'll enjoy cashing his checks.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just. I mean, at that point, when you think about how much they brought in, and what that team brought back too, it's just like, okay, all right. Let's see. Let's see how that one goes and how that one plays out this year.
We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Hey, love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about? We'll head in pretty much any direction. 334-321-1390. Back to wind things down for hour number one here on the Thursday Drive.
War Eagle, ESPN 106.7, and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final minute or so here of hour number one of the Thursday Drive. Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. You mentioned a couple of times the podcast with Dan a little earlier. Ferg, talk a little bit about what has been, you know, what you've had going there at the Observer since you got back. I mean, I noticed I was still getting updates. There was plenty of info while you were gone, but still a lot more. You've added since you've gotten back.
Yeah, so we had you know, a lot of our contributors, pretty much all of them, do something last week while I was on vacation, which was awesome. So we had like some really good like roster management stuff. Got some basketball in there. Had a really cool column from Justin Lee in there. And then so this week I come back, I've done – I did a breakdown this morning of the non-conference schedule in basketball. Mm-hmm. Just some, gave some thoughts there because it is different than what we've seen here recently in more ways than one. I did a story earlier this week on the pass rush for Auburn.
Right.
Just kind of identifying, like, where is it going to come from. I started that story just kind of looking and just kind of digging in, and I remember by the end I was like, okay, this is a really interesting group of guys that I can see a lot of different potential. There's a lot of variety, a lot of versatility in that group. And then I did a story on Nekai Davenport. I'd been wanting to do one really since spring ball ended, and really dug into his tape and his numbers, and came away thinking, you know, if he plays any sort of role in this rotation this season, I think running back rotation, I really like him. He's a hammer. He was second. The stat I found is he broke the second most tackles of any running back in college football last season that had less than 100 carries.
Wow.
So he
there's some really interesting options there in that running back.
He's a hammer, man. Yeah. And I think even if he's just a short yardage red zone specialist, he's a really good fit with those guys next to him. But yeah, AuburnObserver.com. Sign up there. Podcast tomorrow. Me and Dan are going to do a mailbag podcast. We're going to record that tonight, and that'll roll out tomorrow morning.
All right. And we're back with another hour. Love for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Hope everybody doing well. I mean, you'd never know it looking out the window here. But there was some heavy rain for a little while in parts of Auburn a couple of hours ago. We got some, which was unusual. Usually we don't get as much out on the other side of the interstate, on south of the interstate. But we got some, along with some gusty winds. But it blew through here in a hurry. That's the way it is a lot of times in the summer. But it is, I think it's still relatively comfortable. According to my laptop, it's 78 outside. I mean, it was in the 90s. It was hot. It was really, really hot and humid earlier today, but that sort of cooled things off. So enjoy it. It's going to be another hot one. I mean, look, it's summertime. That's the way it's going to be. It's hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer alongside here on this Thursday afternoon. Drew is back at the controls. And Ferg, you talked earlier, and yes, you wrote earlier today about the basketball schedule. Love for you to go into it. We were talking a little bit about it during the break.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's a quality schedule. It's a good schedule.
Yeah.
But it is not nearly – I mean, last year was just ridiculous.
Last two years.
But, I mean, especially last year for the team, for a new team, that was just way, way too much.
Yeah, so it's not official yet, but the people who do a really good job of, like, covering college basketball scheduling have pretty much all of them down.
Here's a game, there's a game.
Yeah, put it together. And so you put it together, and so – This year's 14. You can get 14 non-conference games now. It used to be 12.
So you can play 32 regular season games now.
It used to be 12 unless you were playing in a multi-team event that had three games like Auburn did the last two seasons, and then it gets 13. Mm-hmm. Now it's just 14. Anyway, I can get to 14.
However.
You can play up to 14 as much as you want. So just going to kind of go through them in order. Auburn's home opener is going to be November 4th against Southeast Louisiana. Solid team out of the Southland Conference. November 9th, a rematch, a long time coming, 3 years in the making. App State comes back to Auburn. That is the end of a 2-for-1 agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Auburn 3 years ago went to Boone and dropped that game. November 13th is a Friday night before Auburn plays Mississippi State on the road on that Saturday in football. That is the Arizona game. That is going to be a Friday night.
I understand what you're talking about. I wasn't even thinking about it. Yeah, so you've got a home basketball game against Arizona Friday night and a road
day football game.
Yes, a road day SEC game.
Yeah. And look,
the next day.
I'm not looking for sympathy for people who are in the media and have to cover both. I'm not. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, fan-wise.
For fans, it's tough for anybody.
It's a tough decision to
make both.
Yeah, it's like if you want to go to Starkville, and like it makes it tougher there. But that'll be the third game of the season for Auburn. We'll get Arizona. So they'll get a couple of games before they play that one. And then Players Era, which we know, West Virginia is the opener. They'll play either Kansas or UNLV in the second game. And then could be anybody in that third game. I think the options are, off the top of my head, Houston, Florida, which would be funny if you had to play Florida. Houston, Florida, Notre Dame, or Rutgers are the teams there. Auburn comes back home after that to play Lipscomb on November 24th.
And that's Thanksgiving week. That's Thanksgiving week, yep.
So that'll be Thanksgiving week. They hit after Thanksgiving, they hit the road to play Clemson in the ACC-SEC Challenge, which we knew already. Come back home for a pair of games, which would be Eastern Kentucky and Alabama State back-to-back, and then go back on the road, play Middle Tennessee in the Rocket City Classic in Huntsville, return of that series, and then a few days later they will be in Nashville playing Wisconsin at Bridgestone, and then they wrap up the final two games. They're both back at home before SEC play starts. They play Lehigh and then Morgan State on either side of Christmas.
So there's actually there are more home games.
More home games. There are
this year for Auburn.
Auburn is going to play 8 home games out of their 14 they would play in non-conference. 8 of them will be at home. Another one will be in Huntsville.
Yeah, okay. And then you got nine conference games at home. So
it's a lot more home games this year. And like I said, there's a pattern there that makes sense. You get two in a test. You get two in a test. You get a few tests, and then you come back. Like it goes back and forth. I think that's a lot better balance than what we've seen these last few years. The other big thing that jumps out immediately, you may have picked up on it, no game in Atlanta this year. I don't know if Holiday Hoopsgiving is going to be a thing anymore. I searched a ton yesterday, tried to find out, didn't find anything or see anything from it. They haven't posted anything since January. I don't know if that event's dead or not.
It may be.
It might be. Either way, it doesn't look like Auburn's going to be in it this year. They do play. Really, the last few years, they've kind of had a pattern of these like 3 neutral site games. They get 2 this year, but you get Arizona at home. You get that extra game on the road away from home in Vegas. So yeah, it kind of follows some of the patterns. You basically, they have traded, you know, last year was really frustrating for kind of all parties involved that they had to play Chattanooga in the Hoopsgiving because not really the type of matchup you'd want.
They weren't the original.
No, there were several teams.
Like, they were like third or fourth.
Yeah, multiple teams backed out of that one. So instead of doing that again, playing a team that may, you know, if people don't want to come play Auburn in Atlanta, which I get because like Memphis only beat them. That is the only team that's even come close to beating them. And they usually just crush whoever's in their way in Atlanta. If that's the case, they're going to trade that neutral site game just for another home game. And that's basically the exchange they made. And when you already are going on the road to play Clemson, when you're already going out to Vegas, when you've got a couple neutral site games in the upper, you know, might want to just, you know, take that extra home game if you can get it. So it's a more padded schedule on paper. I think it's a little tougher than the schedule we saw 3 years ago from Auburn where they played Baylor and they played App State on the road, and that would have been Virginia Tech was their ACC game that year. It's going to be tougher than that because Players Era is good. Arizona's going to be really good. But it's not what you had the last couple
years.
Yeah,
you don't have Houston.
Houston and Purdue.
Right.
You've traded Houston and Purdue for Wisconsin, who I think is a good team, and Middle Tennessee. But that's where it kind of compares to the schedule 3 years ago when you had Baylor. And neutral site, you had Baylor in the opener, and then you had UNC Asheville in Huntsville. So it's more like that.
Well, I mean, when you're having so much turnover, which you're gonna have just about every year in basketball, I mean, you want to be able to try to build, and it's great that they're getting to go to Greece. I mean, that is tremendous as far as chemistry and
bonding. And now you can do that every year now.
Yeah, that's right.
And but if you got the money to do it, you can go do it. But
it's still good to be able to get into the regular season and have games like you were saying in the first hour. I mean, Auburn just didn't have the opportunity to try to break some other guys in and try to see if they could ease into the playing rotation.
Or if you have a tough game, you come back and you might get a game or two at home to kind of reset before you go back on your next one. You didn't have that last year.
No.
You only had maybe a couple blips in there where you were like, okay, well, maybe that's a game they could play. So. Or a home game that they could take care of business with. So Yeah, I think this schedule is more balanced. I think it's better for this roster. And look, Auburn, you know, like any basketball, like any team period, is we want to win every game. We want to win a championship, all that. This roster this season is built to be more of the step forward. And, like, you know, last or 2 years ago, they had – 2 years ago and three – 2 and 3 years ago, they had a roster, especially 2 years ago, where it was like, we know this team could be one of the best in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So give us Maui. We know Maui's going to be loaded. Oh, we get Duke. All right, let's see. Houston series starts. Purdue series starts. You get all that going. And then last season it was like, well, you remember they signed that Arizona agreement during the season beforehand. So it was like, and last year it was like, all right, you got to do all that, and you didn't have that Final Four caliber roster. I don't think this roster this year is a Final Four caliber roster, but I think this roster is a lot more in common with that team from 3 years ago that played that similar schedule, where it was, okay, last season was a disappointment from where we wanted to be. Let's take a step forward. Let's, you know, see what we can make some noise. And I think they have a schedule that matches up, and I think that's where you want to be if you're Auburn this year. You want to be, you know, firm NCAA tournament team, one of the better teams in the SEC, and then see what it looks like in the postseason. The schedule that team played, you know, the team that lost to Yale, but the team that also won the SEC championship in Nashville, the tournament championship, that team had a schedule pretty similar to this one, and I think that's a good way to go. It's still challenging. Like, there's opportunities, right? Like, you know, you count up, there's a handful of quad one opportunities you would think right off the bat off of that schedule. You do that, and I think the SEC is going to be even tougher this year as a conference top to bottom. You know, you'll have plenty of opportunities to build up your resume, but it's not overload mode.
Oh, no, no.
Where, like, 2 years ago when they did that, it was like, well, you had a team that you thought could handle it, and they did. They had probably the best resume ever coming into the NCAA tournament and was the number one overall seed. Last season, you did the exact same thing.
Well, you had to pay. Like, I mean, it's like,
and it was like you had a team that was more of a let's just try to get to the NCAA tournament team. You know, this season, I think your roster's stepped up and your schedule's kind of taking a step back. But it's like I think
it's a better balance.
It's a whole lot better balance. It's a whole lot better balance.
And it's situation. I mean, now you don't know, but I mean, there is a possibility that Auburn could have an awful lot of carryover for next year. I mean, just depending.
Yes, yes.
I mean, they've got a ton of guys who can come back
right
for next year. I mean, who knows? I mean, you may have to go out and get 10 or 11 guys again, but there's the possibility that you don't.
Yeah, in college basketball, you can't bank on anything.
No, you can't worry about next year.
But, like, that team that won the SEC tournament, that was the team before the team. I could see this team being the team before the team. And, like, if you have a really good year this year, and you take that step forward, and you can bring back some of those guys, then you could get really aggressive in the portal.
Oh,
you'd have a more incentive to spin big in the portal, you know, spin big to retain guys, more excitement, more, you know, more buy-in. That's the thing. But you gotta build back up. You know, and we saw that. Think about, again, I'm going to compare it to that team from a few years ago, but, like, think about, you know, Auburn wins the SEC with, you know, Jabari and Walker and that really good team. And what happens the next season? They scrape into the NCAA tournament. It was a disappointing year. And then they had to take a step forward from there. Like, even Bruce, towards the end of his career, had to, all right, go back down, go back up again. And that is what you've got here. Like, you know, I think early on in Stephen Pearl's tenure, you can see where the slope could be going up here. But that's just what college basketball is now.
Oh yeah, I mean it's almost impossible to just expect, all right, we're going to build here, and in 2 years, because you have no idea any of the guys that you're signing now, if they have eligibility, where they're going to be in 2 years.
There's a couple teams in the SEC. I would say probably two or three teams in the SEC this year that I think are going all in and just being like, let's get the best roster we can possibly can. We think this is a championship level team. Let's go ahead and do that right
now. And I can't blame anybody for doing that now.
Right. And I think there's a handful of teams behind them that could be really, really good, but it's not the last dance vibes like the team was a couple of years ago from Auburn, where it was like, we're going all in on experience.
It's now or never.
Yeah, it's what Michigan did last year. It's what Florida's doing again this year.
Mm-hmm.
I would say Texas now is at that point, especially with Marcus Spears Jr. But you know, I put Auburn in the same camp of. And different, like, you know, obviously they'll have to sort out, like, who's better than who in this case. But, like, I put Auburn in the camp of Alabama, Vanderbilt, Arkansas to a degree. Arkansas is an interesting case because of, you know, the recruiting they always do there. But yeah, Alabama, Vanderbilt are two that stand out. Kentucky, where it's like you brought back some key guys, you reloaded, and you know no one's going to sit here and say you're a national championship contender right off the bat on this team, but you should be pretty good. And,
it's interesting. I mean, I saw,
but you, I think half the league's like that.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. It's I was a little surprised. You see John Rothstein's preseason picks.
Mm-mm.
He's got Auburn 11th.
Yeah.
In the SEC.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the thing. But he did say that, you know, there's about a half dozen teams that could finish anywhere from, you know, fifth or sixth to 10th or 11th.
Yeah. No, I would say I would probably have Auburn in the top half of the SEC right now. I like this roster. I like the way it's constructed. But, like, yeah, it's like, you know, once you start getting, again, if we go Florida, Texas, Arkansas is just so different because of how talented they're going to be this year. But say those are the top three, then you probably have seven or eight teams mm-hmm. where you're just like, okay, like Alabama, Vanderbilt, Auburn, Texas A&M.
Kentucky.
Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee. Tennessee might be even in a little bit of a different stage there with what they've got. You start looking, and it's like, okay, I just named all those teams. One of those teams is going to be finishing in the bottom half of the
league. Somebody's going to be very disappointed, and there's going to be somebody else. Oklahoma's another team.
It's, right, but got it's a little like, talent too. You say all that, and you start rattling off, and you're just like, okay, one or two of these teams are going to be in the bottom half of the league and could be a very good basketball team. Because it was like when Auburn won the league 2 years ago, they sent all those teams to the tournament. There were some really good teams in that league that – you know, their regular season was kind of whatever. Remember, it's hard to believe looking back and seeing how there is now. Remember 2 years ago, Ole Miss had a losing record in the SEC, and they were like a shot away from playing Auburn in the Elite Eight. Like that Ole Miss, that was mm-hmm. how good that league was from top to bottom. I think they could make a run at that kind of league this season. Just I only really see a couple teams. I see like three, maybe four teams in the SEC this year was like, I don't know what to think about. I don't think you're going to be very good. We just rattled off all the teams. Missouri, I think Missouri's going to be really good. They brought back a lot of talent, and they mm-hmm. they added well. Got the number one point guard in America playing for them this year. Unless you're Mississippi State and South Carolina, and maybe Ole Miss. Like, I don't know. Like, Georgia just went there. I don't love Georgia's roster,
Georgia didn't do what I expected in the offseason, but I mean, yeah.
Mike White's a good coach.
He is.
Like, he has done more with less at Georgia. He just has, and so
he's
like
going to have to continue doing so.
That roster, I don't love that roster. And then it's like Mississippi State. It's like, okay, I know what a Josh Hubbard led team looks like. I know what Josh Hubbard and dudes look like. If he's not hitting every shot, it's going to be
they're
tough
in trouble,
right?
Yep.
I don't love that Ole Miss roster at all, and I think South Carolina is going to be really bad again. Like, I just and that's just kind of been their normal thing. But then, you know, everybody else in the league, you know, you could go 8, 9, 10 teams right there would just be like, I mean, pick an order, you know, 4 through 10. And I'm like, yeah, maybe. Like,
that's
yeah,
right.
I agree. So, and I think on paper, if you're going preseason projections, Auburn might not get as much love from people on the outside because – they're relying on the guys they brought in. They're relying on foreign players, which you never know. Mm-hmm. You can never tell with those. And mid-major guys. All right.
Mid-major guys and another guy and a couple of guys who were injured.
Yes, and a couple of guys who were injured. On top of that, you've got, you know, Tahad, which I think Tahad could, especially with the talent around him, could be really, really good this year, but he had a disappointing year last year.
Right.
And I don't think because of how rough Auburn played in the second half of the season and because it was in the NIT, I don't think at large people who cover college basketball
nationally.
The
perception should be, all right, let's
see
you
know,
prove it.
They don't know how good Kevin Overton was. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't – like, people say, oh, Kevin Overton's coming back. Oh, he was a good shooter last year. It's like, no, you don't understand. Auburn was losing, but he was one of the best off-ball guards in the country offensively. In the second half of last season, he shot 57% from deep down the stretch of that season. It's like there, so there's a little bit more to be like, okay, you can kind of be overlooked, you can kind of be that
right.
kind of underdog,
and that's
a little
fine.
Bit.
That I have no problem.
You
with
will
that.
Take that.
Oh,
you'll
yes.
take that. So yes, the projections are going to say, hey, Auburn could be a top 30 team in college basketball this year. Top 30 might be 12th in the 12th in the SEC.
May not
this
be
year.
In the top 10 in the conference.
Yeah, it's going to be. I think that middle class of the SEC, and it's a big one. It's going to be a bloodbath. But the best thing is if you can get to the top of that middle class or that next tier, you could be having a double bye heading into the national. Oh, yeah. And that's, you know, take that and run with it if you can get it.
No question about it. 20 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Thursday Drive. Need to get to our first break of hour number two. Love for you to chime in, 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind, sports-wise or otherwise, as we continue here with the Thursday Drive.
Or ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. 23 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Ferg, we're still waiting. I would guess probably this weekend we'll get the lineup of the players that are going to be representing teams down in Tampa. Usually it's about a week out that the conference lets everybody know. Who are you thinking? I asked Brian and Jason and Adam this week who they think will be representing Auburn. I mean, the easiest choice is Byron.
Yeah, Byron Brown. I think for defense, you're probably looking at Cody Sigler. Wouldn't be terrible.
No, Cody Sigler would be a great story. There's no question about that. A guy who's moved his way from D2 to to the SEC, moving up level, different levels.
Rayshon was the other one that came to mind.
I was thinking maybe Champ.
Champ maybe, and people maybe sitting here being like, why not Xavier Atkins? Don't bank on it. I'm going to go ahead and make a prediction.
Yeah, I've
don't bank on it.
Yep. Gotten that vibe all week long. Yep. That's
just
exactly
the confirmation
right.
That we've gotten. And nothing against the kid. It's just he doesn't do a lot of media. He just hadn't when he's been in Auburn. So even though he's an All-American talent, I would be surprised. I would be extremely surprised if he was there. And then I keep saying I think Alex McPherson's going.
Well, Jason felt like he's an obvious guy to go down there.
I agree. I think all the media partners and all that, when they get their one-on-one time and all that, I think they're going to want to do like stories on Alex.
Oh, yeah.
Like his story.
It's a great story.
Especially with him looking more like his old self here recently. That one makes sense. So, yeah, Sigler, Rayshon or Champ?
It's funny.
Champ would be interesting just because of the injury situation.
Right.
Like, you know, that would be one I would.
Now a couple of the guys have said, you know, they wouldn't be surprised maybe if it's two offensive players. And if that's the case, Cole Best
would be a good pick.
Because he's a good guy to talk to.
Good guy to talk to for sure. Singleton?
Yeah.
Keyshawn Singleton would be a good one. I would be surprised if it was Jeremiah Cobb. Like, nothing against Cobb. I mean, he's one of the most experienced guys on the team. But it's just like that's, you know, he's not a guy that if you've ever watched an interview with him, he's not a very talkative guy.
He doesn't appear like he's the most comfortable doing that.
No. You don't want to make a guy. I'll tell you if you want to under the radar pick for a good interview, and a guy I think is going to start, Joe Simmons. Joe Simmons would be a really good Media Days take. I think he would be offensive linemen are usually really good. You know, Cole Best. You mentioned that one. I could see that one there. I'm interested in just, you know, Sigler's the one that just jumped into my head.
I love him, and I mean he was a guy that every single practice, players and coaches, he's one of the first guys that got talked about standing out every day mm-hmm. in, day out, one of the obviously you can bring one of the leaders of this team.
You could bring one of the safeties and be all right. Yeah. You got a number of options there. DBs, you know, on the defensive side, it makes sense. I would have fun, you know, personally. I would have fun with with several of these guys. Rayshon, I like talking to Rayshon. And if, you know, Andre Jordan is another one. Hey, just a guy who's coming in with a lot of hype this year, I would say.
Well, Alex would give you a guy at least that can talk about having gone through what Auburn has gone through the last few years and coming through that and the expectations. I think you need at least one. You know, I think it'd be pretty odd to have three guys who, you know, in their first year at Auburn.
Yeah. Underrated one, Dallas Walker. Just experienced guy. Experienced guy who's you know, I think going to be one of the key players on that defensive front this year for Auburn. But yeah, I would say I like a Byron Brown, Alex McPherson, let's say Rayshon Pleasant or Cody Sigler. That would be my top four.
Yeah, right? I sure wouldn't have any problem with those, you know, any of those three.
Yeah. And if they didn't want to go McPherson, if they wanted to go with another player, like you could mention some other ones, but I just keep thinking McPherson's just an easy an easy story, that's an easy call.
Oh yeah.
And you know, if you have offense and defense represented, you can throw that third one on a special team, which they've done in the past.
Yes.
I'm just thinking Sigler and Rayshon are the two that stand out to me the most on defense because they're both seniors.
Yes.
And that would make sense. That's probably going to be it for them. But
yeah, Dallas Walker's another guy.
Dallas Walker's another guy there. But, you know, again, would be very surprised if Xavier Atkins got there. He's just awesome player. Going to be one of Auburn's best players again this year for good reason. But he's not a guy that we've talked to a lot. And that's just, you know, those guys usually don't go to media days, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
There's been awesome players over the years at Auburn who were, and
not just at Auburn. I mean, there have been some great players at different places. Hey, that's not their thing.
There's a couple of guys who are really, really good. Really, really good football players where I would be like, you know, that we would do an interview and I'd be like, I'd be glad if we didn't talk to him again. Like I'd be completely fine with that if we didn't have to talk to him again. Or maybe like
he was, and sometimes for different reasons. I mean, there's some guys that just will not give you any kind of answer except,
I feel like, you know, there's some guys who aren't necessarily the most outgoing in interviews that, like, if I can get you post game and just get you have a good game and I can ask you a few quick questions, that's it. Bang, fine. During the week or during the preseason, like, there's some guys where I'm just like, whoo boy, like, you know, it's going to be like pulling teeth.
What am I going to get out of this?
Yeah, it's and like, look, and it's, you know, I get it. It's like, you don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. You're not getting paid to do this. I'm not, you know, right. I technically am getting paid to do this, but like, look, like, I get it. Like, you know, I wouldn't be the most super comfortable in interview situations as well if I was on the other side of it, but, you know, there have been a few. There's one that comes extremely to mind right now where I was like, you might be one of the best players that's come through here since I've been here. I don't want to talk to you ever again. There's been a few of them like that.
Yeah.
Now, it's good when the best players, the personalities mesh.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You mesh. Byram's going to be one of those guys.
Yes, indeed he is.
I think about – and look, he wasn't the most talkative dude in the world, but my favorite media days ever at Auburn was when Derek and Marlon both went. Derek's not super talkative. Marlon definitely was. They played off of each other so well at media days. I'm like, those are fun. Those are fun when you get guys like that who come in and you're like, okay, we're gonna have some fun here. This is gonna be an enjoyable interview time. But not everybody's like that. And then there's some guys that are just, you know, it's not their game. And I get it. I understand it. But you know, I think Auburn fans, you've got some dudes, some of these new guys coming in, like, they're going to be dudes that are going to be easy to root for. Like, just personality-wise, they're going to be fun. And I think Byram's a very easy one.
And another side to it is when the coach and, you know, when they're making decisions as to who's going to go, you want guys that are comfortable and are personable and, you know, bring that kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, 100%. And I think – yeah, it's like, what do you want to put out there? And, you know, what do you want people to be talking about when they talk about Auburn? Obviously, you're going to want people to point to Byron Brown and the offense and the excitement with Golish and all that. You bring somebody with defense, you can bring that continuity, or you can bring that, you know, extra, you know, a guy you had last year or maybe a new piece to that, and you talk about the excitement there. And again, I just think Alex feels like a layup to you if you want people to be talking positively about that. And I'll tell you one thing about Alex too, is you know, he will talk to you about other guys,
right?
Pretty well, and like, he's, you know, smart guy, and obviously mostly about special teams, but like, you know, he's a very well liked player out there, and you know, he will. I mean, the spring, I talked to Alex for like 15 minutes just off to the side, just about just anything. And it's just like, I think it, those guys can carry it or carry it really, really well. And so it would be interesting to see if they had that. Sigler could be that guy. I really like talking to Rayshon, though. Rayshon's one of my favorite interviews on the team right now. So, and he's gotten some all-SEC kind of buzz as a return man. Mm-hmm. So that would be an easy move to make if they wanted to do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, we should know here pretty soon. I would say, you know, well before the end of, the end of next week with it, with things getting started on the 20th, I'd figure for sure by the middle of next week. So by early next week, that's what I was thinking, maybe over the weekend or Monday, something like that, we'll have the list and see who's going to be representing.
And Auburn's going
everybody.
With Georgia, and who else?
Let's see. It's Kentucky. Okay, I got to remember everybody. It's on the different days. It's two teams that they play. So is it?
I can look it up. They are. I know Georgia's going on.
Yeah, Texas, LSU, Mississippi State, and Arkansas the last day. Kentucky, Missouri, Oklahoma, and
you want to know?
Yeah.
So Georgia, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt.
South Carolina. Okay, that's the other one. Yeah. So Georgia and Vandy, Auburn plays. That's a fun day when you're there.
Yep.
Your team's there, and you're playing two of the three other teams that are
South
there.
South Carolina, we can try to figure out what's going on there.
Yeah.
They've got – that is the easy, like, who's going to go for them picks because it's like they have three, like, superstars on that team. Texas is going to have a fun time trying to figure out who they're going to send because it'll be Arch and, like – it could be anybody on that team. Could be Cam.
You know, quarterbacks are usually the most popular position there. It's going to be interesting to see how many quarterbacks are going to be there this year.
Yeah, I would not expect Alabama to send one.
Wouldn't know.
Auburn will bring theirs. Georgia surely is going to bring Gunner.
Yeah, you would
Arch,
think.
Arch, Trinidad.
Mateer.
Levitt at LSU.
Probably.
Tennessee's still battling, I believe. Yeah. I think it's going to be down between the two freshmen there. Arkansas's kind of got a battle going on.
Vandy's not bringing a freshman.
Although it would be a baller move if they did.
It really would.
Yeah, it would. It would get attention.
Oh, yes.
It would get a lot of attention. Yeah, you'd probably see
fewer quarterbacks.
There was one
usual.
Year where there were a ton.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was like 12 or.
Like Florida's probably going to start Philo, but like I don't know if you bring him to that. Yeah, but Lenoris will be there from South Carolina. I have no idea who's supposed to start at Kentucky this year. I thought they got a pretty decent quarterback. Let me look that up.
I'm blanking. I don't know who Stein's quarterback is, but that's what I mean. There are some big names, but there are some questions as to who the starting quarterback's going to be for certain schools. So it'll be interesting. Ooh, we need to get to our bottom of the hour break, running a little bit behind, but still plenty of time for you to join in if you'd like. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Come on in here in the final half hour.
That's who they got.
With Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. All right, look, we could do a short segment here. Let's talk a little MLB. You were just talking about the Braves. We're coming up on the trade deadline's early August. Mm-hmm. It's not July 31st. It's August whatever-th. Like the 3rd or something like 3rd. But the Braves off to such a great, great start this year. They've been struggling. Man, can't keep a healthy pitching staff, but they're not the only team. I know, Drew. But
the good news is like, so it's been very interesting to watch. The Braves started off so hot in the NL East. Our Braves started off so hot, they went in a slump. Philly started really rough. They got hot. They're cooling off a little bit right now. Marlins were not very good, and they're really hot right now. So, like, it is now a very interesting run there. And the Nats are still kind of hanging around.
And the Mets are better than
The Mets are better. They're still not great. But, like, you know, for the Braves, I had said, you just kind of have to stabilize a little bit. Ronnie out. You got so many guys hurt. Like, you just kind of get into. I had said if they get to the All-Star break with the lead still intact in the division and some momentum, I'll be fine. You know, make some trades and reinforce and good. And lo and behold, they get crushed Tuesday night against the Pirates. Ryan O'Hearn had 10 RBI in that game.
Three homers.
And then they've won back to back to win that series. First series win in a minute for the Braves, and now they go to play the Cardinals, who are not doing so hot right now.
They were the last team to lose a series,
right? So they get that 23. So you know, I think the Phillies are starting to cool off a little bit. I'm really interested if the Marlins have like. I feel like if you took the Marlins. If you made a super team out of the Marlins and the Nationals right now, I think they would be like really good.
That's a couple of young, talented teams.
Oh, man. And like the Marlins, like there's really nobody on their roster that you look at like in their hitters. There's nobody you really look at and you're like, whoa, like that, you gotta watch out for that guy.
Although Otto Lopez is leading the majors batting.
Well, that's the thing, is like they have a ton of dudes who just get on base and they just move the line and they move the line. Meanwhile, the Nats have dudes that are just killing.
They've got some guys that can crush. I mean, they've got 320 homer hitters right now.
Yeah.
320 homer hitters. They're middle infield. I mean, Luis Garcia doesn't even play every day, and he's at 20.
I think
homers.
If you took the Nationals stars and you gave them like a couple of the Marlins hitters and the Marlins pitching.
Because
the Nationals pitching staff is awful. Yes. Like it's beyond bad. But it's a fascinating race. You know, I thought you did see with the Braves getting off to such a hot start, you did see like, they were playing kind of above their heads. Because going into the season it was like, how's this pitching staff gonna work out? Well, they played
early on, it was fabulous.
Oh, man. I mean, Bryce Elder looked like an all-star, and then he turned back into Bryce Elder. And then, you know, Martin Perez looked really good, and he tailed off a little bit. And
Spencer Strider's coming back, and now he's gone again.
So you have that where, you know, and Ronnie's now been on the IL twice now, and it's tough.
And
Austin
Riley.
My
goodness, Austin Riley's just terrible.
And that really hurts because he's making more money than anyone else on the team. That one's tough. But like you've been able to find enough going on, like Matt Olson's heating back up again, which is great to see. Ozzie's had a phenomenal year.
He really has. He's had as good a year as he's had since his first
year. Harris should have been an all-star. I hope he gets to be a replacement player. And then you're getting like Mauricio Dubon's been one of the better clutch hitters in baseball this year. So you can piece it together. You can piece it together. Get healthy. Get some reinforcements to that pitching staff.
They need a pitcher or two. And I mean,
I would love a couple of pitchers, a couple of starters that you feel like because their bullpen's great. Braves bullpen's been excellent this year. Give me a couple of starters that you feel like can give you, like you don't need superstars, but I need guys that like the Braves haven't had a guy pitch into the sixth as a starter in like over a month.
That is crazy. I mean, the name that everybody keeps talking about, Sonny Gray, because he's a Nashville native, played at Vandy.
Yep.
He's a guy he'd love to be there in Atlanta.
There's been
a lot of Sandy Alcantara talk.
Good grief. There's no telling what the Marlins would ask for from the Braves to get a guy like Alcantara.
Well, the thing is, his stock, though, isn't near what it was a couple of years ago. I mean, the guys, you know, Max Meyer and Yuri Perez are the guys that it would take everything to get.
And I don't think he's been as good right now as he was to start the season, because he had a really good start
to the
season. But the one I was talking about earlier, I would love to see Casey Mize.
Oh, yeah.
He's coming up. He's coming up towards the end of his contract his control years with the Tigers. Tigers don't look like a team that's going to be in the playoff hunt, but you never know. The AL's really bad this year.
That's right. I mean, teams can get hot, and all of a sudden they go from out of the picture to win a few games of the wild card.
But like with the thing with Sonny Gray, it's like with Mize, it's like, okay, you know, regional guy, you could get, you know, people would be excited. And he was just – with Casey, it's just like right now, if it's not Chris Sale, I'm not expecting him to go deep in a game if you're on the mound for the Braves right now. Mize, I could at least feel like – Just give me six right now. Because if you give me six, say you're in a leverage game, or you're in a tough opportunity, and you need must win kind of game. If you're Atlanta, if you give me six, I feel good about Dylan Lee, Robert Suarez, Raisel Iglesias, Didier Fuentes, James Karinchak's been like really good out of the pen this year. Dylan Dodds pitched well as a lefty. Like I feel good about the bullpen. But I can't have the bullpen having to pitch four or five innings every single game. That's not what it works. So if you give me two starting arms and give me another bat, just to kind of stabilize the lineup and really go in on this team, right? Really go in with the thought that, you know, your window's not going to get any bigger. Like, you know, Atlanta's got a lot of good players who are still under club control and all that, but, like, the more time goes on, you know, it's not, you know, you're not at the peak. Like, you've got no, to you
that's
gotta
right.
do it.
You're in it right now. I mean,
and the versatility of a guy like Dubon, who can play any position out there for you. So yes, Ha-Seong Kim's been a bust. We all know that. You're not getting a ton out of Yaz. You know, off and on. Dom Smith got hot and cooled off. You got all that.
I mean, well, he's Dom Smith. I mean, you knew eventually it was going to come back.
Yeah, exactly.
Drake Baldwin has been one that's – I mean, he got
he
such
was
a
so
great,
bad. He was
great
so
start,
bad
and then
after the
just,
break.
Then
yeah.
just was – oh.
Yeah. He's getting a little bit. He's getting a little better right now.
Things
but,
are a little bit coming back.
But I feel like if you give me another bat and you get anything from Sean Murphy back off the IL, and more defense with Sean, and you get Ronnie back, and you give me another bat, and you can move Dubon around, suddenly you're in a position where, like, I would say if you get an impact shortstop or an impact outfielder, corner outfielder, okay, now you're in a position where you're fully healthy lineup. You've got, you know, got Murph and Baldwin at catcher. You got Olsen. You got Ozzie. You've got somebody at short you can believe in. And if it's not, like, get one or the other because Dubon will play the other position. You're stuck with Riley. Like, you're just going to hope he gets better.
Yeah.
He needs the break, I hope. Mike in center, Ronnie Wright. And then you've got, you know, guys like, yeah, like coming off the bench, you're not having to rely on, like, you know, those guys like Yaz and like Eli White can run into it. I'll tell you, the guy who played really well today, who's played well these last couple of years, Jim Jarvis, who they called up, just supposed to be Nick Allen all over again, like contacting.
He's
defense.
Actually hit it.
He had his first home run today. Mm-hmm. Put a charge into it. So, like, he would be like, yeah, you just get some interesting kind of people. Jorge Mateo is a guy who can kind of play anywhere. He's had some decent hits this year for Atlanta. So,
You were talking about the net. I just saw this little note from MLB. 10 major league hitters have 20 homers and 60 RBIs. 3 of them are Nats.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy.
3 of the 10 players in Major League Baseball
it's
with 20
Wood
homers.
And Abrams and
Luis Garcia.
Garcia.
Garcia's leading the league in RBIs, and he doesn't even play every day.
Yeah. it's nuts.
But, I mean, in all three of those, I guess Garcia's the oldest at around 25. Those three guys.
Matt Olson had another homer today. He leads baseball in extra base hits, which is funny because he's a guy that
it's not because of the legs.
Yeah, somebody has to die in order for him to get a triple. It's kind of his thing. But yeah, no, it's this Pirates series, and I'll tell you, that Pirates team's good.
They are. They're. Yeah, and I mean they don't have a couple of guys. Obviously, Connor Griffin's out for 8 to 10 weeks.
Yeah, O'Neill's hurt right now, but like. I mean, they were getting perfect game by Jared Jones last night, and just got enough offense, and obviously the pitching get him through. And then today,
they've got some
Keller off early, but that NL Central is a fun race. Mm-hmm. It's a really fun race. All those teams are competitive, except for kind of the Reds right now. But it's fascinating looking at the American League when it's like, all right, Rays, Yankees. And who else?
Yeah.
The AL West is like the worst version of the NL Central where like everybody's still kind of in it, but none of them are really good. And then, I don't know, are the White Sox still leading the AL Central? Like, I don't know what's going on because they're getting Murakami back soon. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that one's interesting. And then in the East, it's like, I mean, there are some teams this year, like the Mets, obviously. The Phillies have turned around off that, but like there are some teams in baseball this year that are looking around being like here at the All-Star break and be like, what in the world happened? It's kind of like the Braves last year.
Yeah.
Boy, I mean, I don't know if there was anybody who thought the Orioles were going to be supposed to be back. They were supposed to be the Blue Jays. Blue Jays are not good. They were a foot away from winning the World Series last year.
Yep, they're five games under the White Sox are tied with the Guardians now.
Yeah, I keep forgetting with the Guardians, where it's just like they're going to play the most boring brand of baseball in the world, but they're going to win, and like it's what they do.
You talked about the AL West where there's only one team over 500. Well, the AL Central. There's only the White Sox and the Guardians are two games over 500, and they're the only ones over 500. So
there was a point where nobody in the
Central and West are over 500, and they're no more than two games over 500.
There was a point this year where there was nobody in the West or the Central that was over 500.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, it's really close. I mean, you're a bad weekend away from that being the case right now going to the All-Star break.
You seen the Home Run Derby group?
I hadn't seen it at all.
I went to the Derby last year and had a blast. It was a really good time.
I saw that.
This is a good lineup.
A lot of young sluggers.
And
I saw Jordan Walker got added.
Walker's in. Cameron Arrow, who has been unbelievable. And he was so fun in the Derby last year. I love watching him. Ben Rice is in it. Let's see. I was trying to remember.
I like the change. I like the change from time to swings.
Yep.
I think that's much fairer.
Bryce Harper just announced in the last hour that he's going to be in it. I was like, the Phillies got to have somebody in it. Let's see. Bryce Harper, Jordan Walker, Wilson Contreras in it.
Huh. Yeah, that's right. Of course. Now he got hurt. I think today, so he may have to pull out.
And then the other one we haven't mentioned, Jack Caglione.
Oh yeah,
which I mean, that's a guy who's built for a home run derby, for sure. So it's a fun group, and you knew the Phillies were going to have somebody in it, and it's like, well, who is it going to be if it's not Bryce?
Schwarber.
But Schwarber to me, Schwarber doesn't fit like a home. I don't know. Maybe it's just because he's. I don't know. Would Schwarber have the stamina at this age to be that home run derby guy?
I don't know. I wouldn't bet against him.
Yeah. I mean, Cal Raleigh won it last year, and you know, gosh, what a year he's had.
Ooh. Goodness. I mean, he had the greatest year last year, and it's like, okay, it's going to average out.
Yeah.
The 2 years are pretty good. But man.
But at the derby last year, I was so struck watching Cameron Arrow. Because he's super athletic, and then O'Neal Cruz hit a ball farther than I've ever seen
he always has. I mean the exit velocity and the distance from him is
if you haven't seen her, do you remember go back and watch it, pull up a video.
I think Ellie ought to be in a home run derby sometime.
Oh yeah, if you haven't seen it, if you haven't seen her, or if you know anything about Truist Park, O'Neal Cruz hit a ball past the Chick-fil-A cow at the top of the right center field thing. Like he hit it, I think it was 512. I think it's that. And when he hit it, we were in our, when we used to have season tickets, Jordan Hill and I, we were behind the plate at the top. And when you hit it, you can kind of get a good gauge from up there about where it is. And when he hit it, I was like, that is the that's the hardest hit ball I've ever seen in my life. And sure enough, it just kept going and going and going. So yeah, it's always fun. The one real bad part about it, Derby's on Netflix this year.
Oh man, I'll still watch it. Oh, we are way behind. That wasn't a short segment at all. We got to wrap it up when we come back here on the Thursday Drive. Looking for a home service company.